Now, I don't know if anyone noticed, but last week's sermon was actually a bit shorter than normal, and I have some good news that this week's sermon will be a bit shorter too. Any applause from the... I look at the kids, I bet the... Yeah, exactly, the kids are applauding. The kids are hoping that this will become the norm. But either way, assuming you were in the area this past Thursday, did you enjoy the lightning storm that we had? Well, Michelle actually got a very good picture. If you go on the Monadnock Region-New Hampshire Facebook page, she got a really good picture of the menacing clouds from that. Even got some likes on the page, right? And if you actually look at my Facebook page, you can see a short video ahead of time, before the rain really came, where the winds were mercilessly whipping the trees around. And actually, we think it was almost tornado-like because we were talking to our neighbor, and he said, well, the trees in our backyard were being whipped one direction, the trees in his backyard were being whipped another direction. And something that seems to confirm that is, if you visit our house, hopefully to be fixed on Monday, you'll notice that in the front of the house, when you have the roof that comes down, and I don't know all the names for the pieces, but that edging along the front at the bottom of the roof, well, part of it was ripped off. And we look down by the woods. Mikey looks over, around. I finally found it directly behind in the dog pen, which means one of two things. Either it was lifted up and over, or, like tornado-like activity, whipped around the house. Somehow it tore it off. And then now we have some siding that decided to come off. And the storm also knocked out power. We lost it about 4:30 in the afternoon for about 12 hours, which means that about 4:30 in the morning we woke up when things beeped as they turned back on. Anybody have it out longer than that? You had it out longer than that?
Out of my school, we had it out up until 6 a.m. the next day.
So until 6 a.m. Half of Antrim was actually knocked out. Some towns fared. When there's a power outage, if you go to the PSNH site, they have this cool page that tells you how many customers they have in a certain area and how many are knocked out. And more than half of Antrim was knocked out. And one of the advantages to a power outage is that when my laptop's battery finally runs low, I am forced to unplug. I do have an iPad and an iPhone, but as it happens, the iPad was already a bit low. Don't know why I plug it in every night. And the iPhone, I figured, well, since I don't know when the power is going to come back on, best to save power in case I need to use it as a phone. And there's something to be said for the silence that having no electricity allows. And I'm not just talking about the fact that you don't have TV or radios or stereos on, but lots of things make noises. Things like the refrigerator. Or if you listen carefully and we're not being noisy, even fluorescent lights make noise. So a power outage gives that kind of slow down advantage too. And something to be said for just breaking open a book and reading by candlelight, or in my case, by a camping lantern, which is exactly what I did that cyber silent night. And I was too tired to get far into it. If you read the bulletin article, you'll see why. But I read a portion of James and ran into the verses that I figured had sermon fodder written all over them. But before we talk about those, I want to talk about something else. And this is an incident that happened to me while I was working for a company called Protix, which ultimately became a part of Tickets.com. And I do apologize ahead of time to those who've already heard the story, although I'll probably add a few things, so it won't be entirely the same. So Protix hired me from the Hopkins Center box office at Dartmouth College to run the ticketing system for the Atlanta Olympics. And between those games and the ones in Sydney, I did a bit of travel, not a ton, but a bit of travel. And one of the things that I did was rent a minivan and drive the computers that we had used for ticketing at the Atlanta Olympics up to Grand Rapids, where one of our customers had bought them. Now, the reason Protix owned them, of all things, was because they traded them in a van for more of my time. The Atlanta Olympics wanted more of my time and said, tell you what, we'll give you those computers and a van if you let Alan work another month or two here. So that's why we had them. And I drove them up there, and I had them up and running, and I had installed the Prolog ticketing software. So but I don't know if you'd say parent company, but Prolog was the company. ProTix was the we'll do it for you arm of it. But I had installed the Prolog software on there, and I did it in a more secure manner than ProTix normally did. And basically, short explanation is where the programs you would run, and I don't know how many of you have dug anything, but where they ran, I locked it down. I locked it down so that nobody in that directory could do something nefarious or do something carelessly, because it's not always nefarious. People don't have to meaningly do bad. How many people have had a call because somebody was trying to save space on the computer and they deleted Windows system files? Well, there was this big file in there, and they deleted it. Right, Scott's shaking his head. Exactly. So you're protecting against that too, right? They didn't do it nefariously, but they deleted something. When you go to boot the computer, it says such and such is missing. So I locked it down, and that difference in configuration led to a phone call from a friend in Madison. And the reason she was calling was because that configuration was causing little hiccups. Now, this person was someone who I had appreciated both my years with ProTix, someone who is competent, kind, and always there to help. I can't say if I considered her a mentor or not, but she was somebody who always had my back. Known people like that at work, especially when you're starting? And she was one of those. She called because the unique setup was confusing people in the support department, and she wanted me to change it to the norm. I explained to her the reasons for the layout, but she was inflexible, saying the configuration she wanted was the way it was done at every other client. And I said to her, and I said it like this, I said, no, please don't take this wrong. But it seems to me, and I think I even use the word we, because sometimes if you say you, that makes it personal, right? It seems to me what we're saying is, because we do it wrong everywhere else, we should do it wrong here. Well, she got flexioned, is that the term? And said she was going to tell somebody, or had somebody tell me to do it, and hung up the phone. She was going to have so-and-so call me and just tell me to do it. And so-and-so, by the way, was number two in the company. And sure enough, a few minutes later, guess what happened? Phone rings. So-and-so is on the phone. No discussion. Just change it. Which, of course, I did. Now, you may think it illogical, but I can't tell you how negative an impact that had on me. Her behavior was totally unexpected. I felt like our friendship had been betrayed. I felt betrayed myself. Instead of being a co-worker who would be there in thick or thin, she was just another employee who would support me when it suited her and would have me slapped down if that's what it meant to get her way. And this is one of multiple instances during my 47 years where somebody totally caught me off guard. Where someone who seemed the epitome of dependability and trustworthiness proved, under certain conditions, surprisingly undependable and untrustworthy. Have you had similar incidents? I think if I look around and you give me the nod, everybody has had incidents like that. And for some people, it happens in a way that it permanently shatters all their confidence in mankind. And to protect themselves, they move forward as a loner, never trusting anyone again for fear their fragile heart cannot take the next great betrayal. Now, I want to say something in defense, or in fairness, I should say, to that woman who formerly worked for ProTix. She wasn't a bad woman. She actually was a pretty nice woman by human standards. But, you know, I couldn't help from that point forward wondering what the next situation would be that she would, I'll put it in air quotes, turn on me. Why would I act that way? Well, I'd never expected the first one. So since I never imagined the first episode would happen, there was absolutely nothing I could do to convince myself that it wouldn't happen again. And that's why a breakdown of trust is so very, very damaging. No matter how much you try to push it in the back of your head, you can't tell yourself that you now know that it'll never happen again because you didn't expect it in the first place. Now, I know it's hard to believe that this sermon's going to be shorter than normal, being that I've been already speaking this long and we haven't gotten into Scripture, but it will. Trust me. And at this point, let's go ahead and look at those verses that caused a bunch of strange mental connections to kick off in my brain. And part of the reason it'll be shorter is I'm not going to share every mental connection that kicked off in my brain. For instance, we won't be discussing a David Bowie song or anything like that. But James chapter 1, verses 16 through 18. James chapter 1, 16 through 18. My readers aren't here. We also lost John, too, didn't we? And his daughter. Wow, I better get this wrapped up. James 1, 16 through 18. Is it something that I said or wore or something? Is my zipper down and nobody wants to laugh at me? Do not be deceived, my beloved brothers. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth, that he should be a kind of first fruits, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. The Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Our God, unlike our friends, our family, our co-workers, our God does not change. And I especially like the combination of that fact with the word shadow, as in no shadow due to change. My co-worker did change, and a shadow arose that remained over her and my relationship from that point forward. Some might argue she actually didn't change. She was always that way. I just didn't see it before. They have a point. But the fact is that all humans, including me, have two faces. The question is, what is the catalyst that will cause the negative or bad side to actually be shown? And I believe if you think about it, that you also know people who literally have changed over time. And generally it's for the worse. They become more curmudgeonly, is that a word? Sometimes it's for the better, especially if they've turned to Christ. But they aren't the same person they were 10 years ago or 20 years ago. People do change, sometimes on a dime, sometimes over time. And generally, we do not change for the better unless the Lord is the reason for the change. But our God never, ever, 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 I used that term before, our God never, ever, ever, ever changes. He is always, always the Father of lights. There is no variation, no shadow. Never, ever, ever, ever. Now, since doesn't change isn't impressive enough to use in scholarly theological circles, there's another word I've previously mentioned that is used to describe this facet of God's character. Does anybody remember what it is? It begins with an I? Well, I guess a lot of them begin with an I, right? Immutable. Do you remember that term? Immutable. The Max Dictionary says it's unchanging over time and unable to be changed. Unchanging over time and unable to be changed. And that latter part's actually very important too. And that reference back in James isn't the only place that speaks to the doctrine of God's immutability. Let's turn to Numbers 23, verse 19. Numbers 23, 19. Are we there? Numbers chapter 23 and verse 19. God is not man that he should lie, or a son of man that he should change his mind. Has he said, and will not he do it? Or has he spoken, and will he not fulfill it? God does not lie. He does not change his mind. He does what he says. His actions match his words. How many people do you know you can say that of 100% of the time? How many people can say that of you? Now in Malachi chapter 3 verse 6, we also hear of God's immutability and why the Israelites up to that time should have been thankful for it. It says, "For I, the Lord, do not change. Therefore you, O children of Jacob, are not consumed." Now, if God was actually fickle, that nation, with good reason, would have been already wiped off the map a long time before Malachi. But lucky for them, the Lord does not change. Now, I could give you more verses about God not changing. But ultimately, first of all, one thing I want to point, if you ever do a study, be careful. Because they have a habit of taking verses out of context, and they probably mean it. But a lot of times, even the one in Malachi, just think about it, he's talking about something else. Obviously, in that case, I thought it was appropriate. But if you do a study of God's immutability, you're not going to find a whole bunch of scriptures where God was specifically talking about the fact that he doesn't change, that that was his point. Like in this case, Malachi is talking to the Israelites. And we can take it, but just be very cautious. And instead of trying to give you more, quote-unquote, proof texts, I think from life that we have learned, and the same is true with God, that actions speak louder than words. So let me ask you this. I want you to stop for a moment. I want you to think hard, very hard. Can you think of one time that God has acted out of character? Just once. You know, a day when he was extra tired, or someone had been mean to him at work, or he was fighting a bad cold, or he had just reached his limit. Can you think of one incident where God, because it just was a bad day, you know, car broke down on the way to work, that God acted out of character a single time? Now, the answer, I think, since nobody raised their hand. Go ahead, anybody got one? Since nobody raised their hand, the answer is no, you can't. But some might bring up the fact that scriptures do say that God regretted something, which implies changing his mind. Or they can find some verses that seem to show God running out of patience. But we've talked before, and it is natural for human writers to use anthropomorphism, which is attaching human characteristics to something that is non-human, or anthropopathism, which is attaching human emotions to something that is non-human. It is natural for them to do that when they are describing God. First, Those characteristics are what we know. Anthropos means human in Greek. So clearly, it's something that we would understand. And second, talked about this too, there is no perfect way to describe an infinite God with finite words. So of course we would use word pictures that we can easily understand. Does that all make sense? Well, it could sound like God did regret, or God did lose patience. And I realize that that explanation might not be satisfactory. So let's take a quick look at God's succinct autobiographical statement in Exodus chapter 3. I'm sorry, chapter 34, verses 5 through 7. Exodus chapter 34, verses 5 through 7. Another thing about the giant print Bible, I seem to find the books in a lot faster. I guess it's helpful that the short books don't take up a half a page. So chapter 34 in Exodus, verses 5 through 7. The Lord descended in the cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed the name of the Lord. The Lord passed before him is Moses, by the way, and proclaimed, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and the children's children to the third and the fourth generation. Yes, our God is merciful. Our God is gracious. Our God is slow to anger. Our God is abounding in steadfast love. Our God is abounding in faithfulness. Our God is forgiving. But what else did we read in those verses? He also will by no means clear the guilty. We may describe him as regretting a decision or losing patience, but the reality is he has always promised justice as surely as he has promised compassion. He has always promised punishment as surely as he has promised reward. He has always promised disaster as surely as he has promised protection. But not in a fickle, which side of the bed I climbed out of kind of way. And always with plenty of warning when it comes to the negative outcomes. As Numbers 23:19 said, he always does what he says. And sometime he said chastisement was coming. Although he also said that he will relent if people will turn back to him. When we change, God's actions and judgment can change. He, God, does not change. We change. Which brings us to God in the person of the Son. Let's wrap up with some verses from 2 Timothy chapter 2, where we will learn one more thing about God's immutability. So 2 Timothy chapter 2, 11 through 13. 2 Timothy chapter 2, 11 through 13. We there? One of the types of verses that I like in the New Testament is when Paul shares what appears to be a saying from the early church. This would, I don't know if I'd be able to find them all very easily, but this would be another good study. It would be good things for us to memorize. If it was good enough for the early church, it's good enough for me. But this is what Paul wrote. The saying is trustworthy, for if we have died with him, we will also live with him. If we endure, we will also reign with him. If we deny him, he also will deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. No matter how faithless we humans are, God remains faithful. We cannot change him. What was part of the definition of immutable? Doesn't change and cannot be changed. We cannot change him. He remains faithful to all his characteristics, whether it be judgment, if we deny him, he will deny us, or it be mercy, if we have died with him, we will also live with him. If we endure, we will also reign with him. If we have died with him, we will also live with him. He has said it. Will he not do it? And this is where the title of the sermon comes. Indubitably so.